Now, here's a fascinating study from Melbourne about something called rapid autopsy. It sounds a bit morbid, but it could, in theory, change knowledge radically about cancer, particularly cancer that's spread. On the line from Wodonga, that well-known international centre for cancer research, I'm not sure why he's there, Professor David Botell, who's head of cancer genetics and genomics at the Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre in Melbourne. Welcome to the Health Report, David.
Hi, Norman. How are you?
Fine. So you're opening a new centre in Wodonga, are we?
There's actually a fantastic cancer centre up here, but
I'm sure
no,
it is.
We have a property up here, so we're up here for a couple of weeks' holiday.
I'm interrupting you on your holidays. Tell us about what you can, why rapid autopsy and what you can learn from it.
Well, over the last few years, we've learned a great deal about the cancer that's present when a person is diagnosed. And I mean ovarian cancer, breast cancer, bowel cancer. But surprisingly, we know almost nothing about the cancer when it comes back. And you would think that's not really a problem because, you know, it's come back. But actually, it evolves under the impact of chemotherapy. And you see things, or things occur that you can't infer from the disease at diagnosis.
So why rapid?
We're interested in sequencing the genes and the products of those genes, and those things decay quite quickly within hours after a person dies. We're also aiming and have successfully grown cells from patients after they've died, but again, the cells will die within hours as well. So it was important to be able to put together a process that allowed us to commence the autopsy within around about 5 hours.
Now, this involves an incredible logistical exercise. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was quite a challenge. I guess the first thing to say is we've had wonderful involvement from cancer patients who are near the end of their life and their families.
Who are very overwhelmingly happy to help.
Very much so. I think it's an opportunity to add a contribution to, obviously, a sad situation. You know, a common comment was, you know, thank you for letting Mum participate in that. She knew it wouldn't help her, but she was worried about what would happen to the, you know, us kids after she was gone, and this was a chance to try and improve the odds.
Now, it involves coordinating with undertakers, people who might be dying at home and as well as in hospital, and getting rapid scans on the way through. Just tell us about that.
That's right. 20 or 30 years ago, autopsies were commonly performed in most hospitals, but are hardly done these days. And so what we needed to be able to do was to access the physical infrastructure and the know-how of doing autopsies in a cosmetically acceptable way and to a very high standard. We wanted to enroll patients who are not necessarily dying in the hospital where they're enrolled, but might be dying at home or in a palliative care centre. And we needed a process to take into account the fact that 70 or 80% of them would die outside normal working hours. And they would die, and our participants died over a geographic area of over 300 kilometres. And so what we were able to put together in terms of the logistics was a partnership, first of all, with Tobin Brothers, the funeral service, who have been wonderful participants in the study in helping us transport the participants after they'd died to the Victorian Institute for Forensic Medicine, also just a terrific participant and partner in the study. VIFM performs around 2,000 autopsies a year, and so they had 24/7 infrastructure in place that would allow us to perform the autopsies very rapidly and much more affordably than if we tried to assemble that infrastructure ourselves.
So what have you've done, been going on for 3 years and you've done quite a few now. What have you learned?
Well, lots. In the beginning, we were looking for genes that were associated with the development of chemo resistance. So that's the resistance to chemotherapy, the drugs that people are treated with, and we found them. We found a variety of things in the case of ovarian cancer, which has been the focus for us, but also for the other diseases that make use of cascade. That's what the rapid autopsy program's called. But we also found something really curious that I think will turn out to be very important. And we found that in some of the ovarian cancer patients, that the cells are not all the same. The cancer cells are not all the same as each other. They've evolved subtle differences between them. If to use an analogy, it's a bit like Darwin's finches. They've all come from a common ancestor, but they're subtly different in terms of their beak length or, you know, the colour of their feathers. Well, in the case of some of the patients, the cancers had evolved subtle differences. That had been seen in other cancers, and we'd seen it earlier in ovarian cancer as well. But what was very unusual was that we found that some of the clones would populate a metastatic site, let's say clones 1, 2, 3, and 9. That was a little surprising. We expected, you know, an individual site would be monoclonal, just one clone. But what really surprised us was that this quartet of clones in one patient was seen at multiple sites. They were like friends that liked to get around together.
So it was a very typical population in each place.
Yes, but it was this particular four. So it's, again, to use the Galapagos analogy, it was like going to an island and finding four species of finches.
So does that change treatment, do you think? If those people were, knowing what you know now, does that change treatment?
Certainly for the resistance genes, we think that that's clinically actionable. That it's on one of the mechanisms we found suggests that certain sorts of chemotherapy are not going to work and that we should use different types. And there's also a drug against one of the molecular events, the pumps that we identified, that we think can also be used to reverse resistance.
So somebody listening who's got secondary cancer at the moment would say, well, why can't you do these tests on me while I'm still alive, so you know?
Well, that's also part of the study. So my colleagues Sarah-Jane Dawson and Mark Shackleton are looking in melanoma and seeing to what extent the molecular changes that we can find in the solid deposits in the patient are actually reflected in the blood. DNA is released from the cancer cells as they divide and die and divide again. Some of them die. And the idea is to see whether a liquid biopsy will represent all the different diversity that's present in the patient.
David, it's fascinating. We'll catch up when you've got some more results from this amazing project. David Bottel, who's head of cancer genetics and genomics, the laboratory at the Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre in Melbourne. You're listening to The Health Report.